Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey, hate to just be starting on negative news, but the attrition continues at University of Colorado. The excitement over a transfer running back coming in, maybe as a starter, but certainly to provide quality depth. Ramon Jefferson, Sam Houston State, you've been writing about that transfer now is in jeopardy because he may be going to University of Tennessee.
Yeah, it sounds like the chances of him ending up a volunteer are pretty high at this point. He hasn't announced anything yet, but that would be another hit to this program and another example of just how it's hard for Colorado to compete in this new environment. I think there's a misnomer that when a transfer signs a grenade that that's binding, but yeah, I'm sure Colorado fans remember back in 2016, they thought they had Davis Webb in the fold at quarterback, and he ended up going to Cal instead. That was that offseason where Sefo Lufau had the foot injury, and people didn't know if he was going to be ready to go. That worked out for Colorado. Lufau was pretty darn good in 2016, and they had one of their few successful seasons in recent memory. But it's binding for the school, but not for the player. It's unlike when a junior college or a high school prospect signs. The college can announce it, and we talked to Darren Hagan about Ramon Jefferson this spring, and he was glowing about him, and we're about to do our top-offs countdown. I had Ramon Jefferson easily in my top 10. You could even make a case that he could end up being a top-five football player on this team, but when the SEC comes calling and there's some NIL opportunities there, it's hard to blame the kid. It's just the environment of what it is right now. And so it sounds like it's going to be an unfortunate move. And it's so late now, Colorado does have a verbal commitment from Anthony Hankerson from St. Thomas Aquinas out in Florida that they were going to grayshirt him, which would mean that he would delay his enrollment. But you could bring him in early now. But you thought you were going to have this transfer from the FCS ranks that was a second team All-American last year that was going to be plug and ready to go. And I like Alex Fontenot. He's been their lead back before. He did okay in that role in 2019, but I sure like their running back situation a lot more when you talk about Alex Fontenot being their number two guy or kind of 1A, 1B, as opposed to now Fontenot, who missed pretty much all the spring ball due to injury and has had injury issues. He missed the whole 2020 season with an injury. So you got to be concerned about running back now if indeed Jefferson does go to Tennessee.
Yep, and in getting into the larger picture on this issue, this after the spring meetings with the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, all of a sudden the NCAA says, okay, we're going to crack down on boosters now that are using name, image, likeness payments to recruit, because this is clearly forbidden. They offered new, quote-unquote, clearer guidelines. But the agents and the collectives that are banding together, putting dollars together to pay athletes to attend their favorite alma mater, are laughing at this and saying, you haven't got a shot because of antitrust. As soon as you file a lawsuit, as soon as you come up against a school or a player, and they're citing Justice Brett Kavanaugh's opinion in NCAA versus Alston. So what is the NCAA thinking? It seems to me there's a huge loophole I can explain as we get into this, but does the NCAA have any shot at all to police this thing?
Probably not. No, I think you needed all of this in place when NIL hit, and it's too late probably at this point. And like you said, there's legal complications that are involved in this. And it's too late, I think. And you can probably try to put up some guardrails, but unless you're going to start cracking down on programs that are breaking the rules, and I don't think the NCAA has the resources and frankly, the willingness to do that. So maybe it changes the environment a little bit. I think one thing that could change the environment is potentially that these businesses aren't really getting the return on their investment, but when you're dealing with boosters, I don't think they really care, right? I mean, that's more about it's their pride in their school and trying to win football games more than it is actually gaining anything from having these players partnering up with their company. So, yeah, maybe NIL gets a little less crazy than what it's been the last year and a half, but it's never going back to the way that it was. It's impossible for it to be. So there's going to be they're going to continue to use this in recruiting as much as you might try to fight that.
You know, I agree with what you're saying. They're defining boosters as anyone who furthers the interests of a school, and that includes recruiting. And boosters theoretically can't recruit, even though the definition of a booster is someone who helps recruits, you know, to a school or athletes at a school. But the loophole, it seems to me, is, okay, the deals don't require you attend a specific school, but no one has to say that. And you can't contact the prospective student athlete until they're enrolled. But you don't have to, you know, because there's someone there to say, look, the offensive tackles on this team are making $53,000 a year in nil benefits, and they have to show up for 4 photo shoots. And no one has to say that if you sign here, you will get that. It's all understood, and it's all sitting there, and it's all waiting. And so the collectives, the boosters, they don't have to entice a player by sitting down at a table and offering him cash. It's all set up, ready to go. There's no enforcing this thing. And like you say, return on investment has nothing to do with whether or not our car dealership sells more cars. Has everything to do with whether or not we win some football games this fall, and that's our return on investment.
Yeah. I mean, the NCAA would almost have to hire a person for every single program to police this, and then even then you'd still have some legal issues that you'd have to deal with. I mean, it's unfeasible to think that they're going to be able to fully wrap their arms around this at any point in the future, which then you start hearing rumblings of maybe the Power Five programs break off from the NCAA. And what does that mean? And all that means for CU specifically is you're just not competing on a top level. And, you know, I know the cynic might say, well, they haven't for a long time anyways, but that would just ensure that there's no chance for them to pull out of the hole they're in as a program right now, because it goes beyond that, Michael. I mean, they had a power forward recruit, Bobby Clinton, that they were really excited about. He doesn't pass CU admissions, and Wake Forest, which I know it's a private institution, but they're ranked higher than CU in all the academic lists. They get him in. Colorado can't really pull in most transfers unless they're graduates, which really shrinks the market because of their admissions department. So not only is CU dealing with all this NIL stuff and the transfer portal complications, they're dealing with academic stuff that schools like Stanford and Vanderbilt are, but, you know, they don't have the prestige of Stanford and Vanderbilt. So there's so many reasons that it's going to be very difficult for CU to sustain success as a football program. And so the deck is definitely stacked against Carl Durrell or whoever ends up coaching this program long term.
You know, I my experience is that Stanford gets all kinds of athletes into their programs. That their average student and their student athlete, there is a huge discrepancy between the standards and has been for like 30 years.
Yeah, but they're Stanford, right? So, you know, there are those elite athletes that have those grades that can get in there, and so they're going to pick Stanford over CU from that standpoint 10 times out of 10. So when you have the same restrictions that a Stanford does but not the prestige, that's where the challenge comes in.
I'm saying I don't think Stanford has the same restrictions as CU. I think they're easier.
No, they have pretty stringent academic requirements in terms of getting guys in. It's a scale that they have to go off of. So they can get a few borderline guys on, but generally their recruiting classes, if you look top to bottom, are pretty solid academically. It is generally pretty tough. They've got to get into the general admissions process. So it is challenging for them, but they're Stanford, so they get the cream of the crop in terms of those kids.
Okay, last one for you in our last minute here. The fact that Jabari Walker received an invite to the NBA Combine, is that the final nail in the coffin? There is no way he's coming back?
Not necessarily if he doesn't perform well and get the feedback that he desires. I know his father, Samaki Walker, told ESPN that it's a done deal, he's going pro, but Jabari has maintained through this whole process that he has not gotten an agent, that he's going to listen to the feedback before he makes a decision. So there's a little bit of miscommunication between he and his father, apparently, or his father's playing some kind of game to get his name out there. But it's still all along, it's come down to the feedback that Jabari Walker gets. If he's not you know, guaranteed to get picked, not necessarily as a first-round pick, but, you know, there's a lot of mock drafts that don't even have him as a second-round pick. So if he goes out to the combine and performs well, then yes, I would agree with you, but he's still got to go ahead and do that.
Hey, Adam, thank you very much. Everybody, BuffStampede.com. Let's catch up on football recruiting, the fast start for 2023 that Carl Durrell's having when we talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.